Welcome to Heirloom Radio, a different kind of oldies program featuring oldies from the golden age of radio. Hello, my name's John Lovering, and I'm pleased to be your host for this podcast. It pays to be ignorant. No, that is not something I'm declaring. Rather, that is the title of the show on this track. This half-hour comedy program, a spoof of serious panel programs like Information Please, featured a panel of supposedly dim-witted characters who were asked simple questions like, who is buried in Grant's tomb, and what is the color of the White House? The show's moderator and host was a former vaudeville comic by the name of Tom Howard. At first, the networks were reluctant to air the show because of the insulting title, but eventually, WOR, a local station in New York City and part of the Mutual Radio Network, took a chance. The program was a big success, there for 2 years, and then moved to CBS. The panel of expert fools on the show was comprised of three very different and colorful performers. Lulu McConnell, she was rather a loudmouth comedian, George Shelton, a typical Brooklyn, New York comic, and Tom Howard's former comedy partner on vaudeville, and then there was Harry McNaughton, a dry, dim-sounding Englishman. The program was the brainchild of Howard's daughter, Ruth, and was written by Tom Howard and Ruth Howell. The show was directed by Herbert Polizzi, Al Madrew, and the Esquires, and then the Corncobbers, a Spike Jones-like unconventional orchestra, provided vocals and music interludes during the show. The announcers were Ken Roberts, Bruce Elliott, and Richard Stark. Sponsors included Peel's Beer and Philip Morris and Revelations Cigarettes. The show first aired on WOR in 1942, moved to CBS in 1944, and then to NBC from 1950 to 51. When the show concluded its run. 9 years, not bad for a show that was originally thought to be too insulting to produce. So here is an episode of It Pays to Be Ignorant from April 21st, 1944, with the lead-off question being, how do you keep the back door from slamming? This is Heirloom Radio, a different kind of oldies program, and I thank you for listening.
Keep the back door from slamming.
Use the front door.
Correct. Pay that man $11. What is the difference between a bridge game and a dice game?
You wear out your pants in two different places.
Correct. Pay that man $12 because...
it pays to be ignorant.
As living proof to all you servicemen and women listening in over there that it does pay to be ignorant, here's another half hour with radio's biggest collection of zanies, the incomparable wit, George Shelton, Lulu McConnell, and Harry McNaughton, our doctor of music, Nat Novick, and the man who sticks his neck out every week at this time, our moderator, Tom Howard.
Thank you. Thank you, Ken Roberts. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Corn is ripe. In other words, here's that quiz program with a board of experts who are so dumb, they think the automat is something you wipe your feet on. To show you what a guy will stoop to in order to make a buck, I'll introduce him to you. First, we have the celebrated author, Mr. Harry McNaughton, who has just written a book entitled 9 Years in a Phone Booth, or How to Get Your Nickel Back. But here he is, Mr. Harry McNaughton.
I have a poem, Mr. Howard.
Yeah, don't I know it.
Would you like a fur coat, said the seal to the eel? I'd love a fur coat, said the eel to the seal. You're in, said the seal, as he swallowed the eel.
You're in, said the seal. Wonderful.
No more eel.
No more eel. Slippery cuss, I imagine.
Oh, yes. You know, Mr. Howard, oft times it's the mink in the closet that's responsible for the wolf at the door.
All right. A very nice quotation. Next. Next, we have a woman who looks like a bale of hay with the center hoop busted. A woman with a winning smile but a losing face. A woman who has traveled all over the world. Here she is, Miss Lola McConnell. Miss McConnell.
You know, Miss Howard, I had my lunch in one of those automat restaurants today. I'll never go there again.
You had some trouble, I take it.
Did I? I put a nickel in the coffee slot, and by the time I climbed up on the shelf and got my mouth under the faucet, all the coffee had run out.
Isn't that awful?
Oh, Miss McConnell, I'm terribly surprised at you, really. You should put your mouth under the faucet before you put the nickel in.
Yeah. Will you please cut it out?
I always do that.
All right.
With great alacrity.
Look, can we get on here? Next, we have a man who, when he visits you, can stay longer in 5 minutes than the average person could stay in 2 weeks. Here we have a man who likes to eat red cabbage so he can hiccup in technicolor, Mr. George Shelton.
Hey, did I tell you the latest from my Uncle Webb put up on the farm in Maine, Mr. Howard?
Look, Mr. Shelton, I don't care to hear anything about your uncle up in Maine.
Oh, well, you should. This is good. Listen.
I imagine.
He writes to me and he tells me he has a blind rat running around on the farm.
All right.
A blind rat?
Yeah.
How can a blind rat find cheese?
Oh, he uses a seeing-eye mouse.
He uses a seeing-eye
mouse. Hey, he's got him on a leash.
All right.
Well, at least that's the way they told me.
Never mind the pun. Well, folks, there they are. Any resemblance between our three experts and three human beings is purely accidental. Our first question tonight comes from Mrs. Faye Ether of Detroit. Here is her question. Did Julius Caesar conquer Gaul before or after he was assassinated? No help from the audience, please. The question is about Julius Caesar.
That's the guy that made a mark out of Anthony, ain't it?
A mark out of Anthony, very clever. The question is, did Julius Caesar conquer Gaul before or after he was assassinated?
That's you know, I had an uncle once worked in the quarries in Gaul.
What? In the
quarries? I didn't know there were any quarries in Gaul.
Where do you suppose people get their gallstones?
Get their gallstones.
My friend Sadie White had a terrible time with her gallstones. Cost her $5,000.
$5,000 for gallstones?
Yeah.
Where did she get them, at Tiffany's?
Where'd she get them? All right, Mr. Sheldon, can we please get on with a question? Try and give us an answer here. Was Julius Caesar assassinated before or after he conquered Gaul?
I'll never forget the time I was vaccinated.
I didn't say vaccinated. Assassinated.
I was vaccinated.
All right. Too bad you wasn't assassinated. Let's get on there.
Oh, did I have a time of it?
I imagine.
My arm got all swollen up, all the way out.
Oh, yeah.
And would you believe it? My arm was as big as a ham.
Yeah, and the swelling never went down, either. It also went to your head. What has that got to do with Julius Caesar? Look, haven't any of you ever heard of the fall of Rome?
Well, now that you mention it, I did hear something drop.
You did, I see. Must have been your upper plate. Julius Caesar was a famous general and a statesman.
Yes. Too bad he was deaf, wasn't it, Mr. Howard?
He was... Wait a minute. Julius Caesar wasn't deaf.
No? Why was he asking everyone to lend him their ears?
Lend
him.
Oh, good heavens. Did the poor boy have any ears?
Miss McConnell, why do you have to abuse the privilege of being stupid? Why do you do that? Julius Caesar was a great Roman general and a dictator. In 63 B.C., he became Pontifex Maximus.
Oh, Sadie Wright had that.
She had
it. Yeah, it settled in her chest first.
Thank
and
you.
Then it went to her head.
All right.
Of course, it wasn't serious.
Oh, fine.
But then they didn't have the doctors in those days that we have now.
Miss McCullough.
Like when I had my first operation,
yes,
I had four doctors.
Oh, shut up! That's a good idea, Mr. Sheldon.
Thank you.
know what's worse, this music or Sheldon's uncle. Forget to bring their instruments with them some night. Might sound all right. Well, anyhow, here's the next question. See if we can make a better showing with this one. It comes from Private Alan Woodley of Fort Bragg. Young Woodley wants you to tell him how many ends are there in a piece of string 3 feet long. Simple.
What was that, Mr. Hobbs?
How many ends are there in a piece of string 3 feet long?
How wide is it, Mr. Hobbs?
How wide is what?
How wide is a piece of string?
Look, I'm asking the questions, Mr. McNaughton.
Oh, he got out of that one nicely, didn't he?
How many ends are in a piece of string 3 feet long?
One end.
What? One end? How do you figure that out?
Well, say you got a piece of string 3 feet long.
Yeah.
I said, I got a piece of string 3 feet long.
Wait a minute, wait. Miss McConnell, to what do you attribute your success as a moron?
I listen to you.
Thank you. You're overdoing it. You go right ahead, Mr. Sheldon. You said there's only one end to a piece of string.
That's right. That's what I said. Say you have a piece of string 3 feet long and you're going to wrap a package.
Yes.
What's in the package?
Mr. McCart, what difference does that make?
Oh, it makes a lot of difference, Mr. Hard. If you're going to wrap, let us say, a 15-pound turkey, 3 feet of string wouldn't be enough.
I see.
Wrap up a turkey? Where'd you get the turkey?
Oh, wait.
How much did you pay for it?
Miss McCart.
Why, you know, I've been trying to get a turkey for over a week now. We're going to have a wedding at our house.
What?
A wooden wedding at our house we're going to have.
A wooden wedding?
Yep. My sister married a blockhead.
Well, blockheads ought to run in your family. I want to hear what Mr. Sheldon has to say about the string. Go on, will you?
Well, say you got a piece of string 3 feet long, and you're going to wrap a package.
All right.
Yeah, but you said that before, old chap.
He knows he said it before. Let him alone, will you?
Well, I still think he's going to need more string if he's going to wrap up a turkey.
Look, he hasn't got a turkey. It's just a small package.
Then he has too much string.
He has too much.
Wasting string in these times, I mean...
Please, will you shut up? The question is, how many ends are there in a piece of string 3 feet long? Mr. Sheldon says there's one end. I'm anxious to find out how he figures that out.
Well, say you got a piece of string 3 feet long, and you're going to wrap a package.
Boy, I hope no one is waiting for that package.
Will you please keep quiet? I'm warning you. Mr. Sheldon has the floor.
You'll never wrap that up with a 3 foot piece of string.
I wish I knew where he got that turkey. Boy, wouldn't my old man like to have a nice, big, fat turkey?
Your old man's got one. Go right ahead, Mr. Shelton.
Well, say you got a piece of string, and you're going to wrap the package.
Shall we play gin rummy, Miss McConnell?
Oh, I'd love to.
Thank you.
Where's the gin?
Where?
Say you got a piece of string 3 feet long, and you're going to wrap a package.
Okay.
Now you reach for the string, and what do you pick up? You pick up the beginning of the string.
I see. Well, that's one end of the string. Go on.
No, that's the beginning of the string. I haven't come to the end yet.
All right. But it's still one end of the string. They're both the same.
You mean the beginning is the same as the end?
Certainly.
What kind of books do you read?
All right. Never mind. Finish what you're saying.
Yes, the 11 o'clock news will be here any minute.
It's fast.
You pick up the beginning of the string and you wrap the string around the packet.
Oh, yeah.
Then you cross the string. Then around and around she goes.
And where she stops,
Nobody knows.
Well, daylight never comes.
She's wrapping up Major Bowes.
Then you turn the package around and you go around once again with the string till you come to the end of the string.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the end. One end.
But how about the other end? That's an end, isn't it?
I told you that was the beginning. There's just one end.
No, but suppose you pick up the string in the middle. Then how many ends would you have?
You mean you unravel a whole ball of string to get to the middle of it?
Oh, that's silly. Listen, I just got through it. Here, come on. We take a piece of string 3 feet...
Ah, nuts! Yes. Let's get out of this thing. Let's unravel the whole thing. We're getting tied in knots.
Low and lonely, but I'd feel so good if only someone told me where my darling is tonight. Oh, she went away this morning, never gave me any warning, not a single word or letter did she write. Lulu Bell, Lulu Bell, can't you hear me calling, darling, Lulu Bell? Everything will be forgiven, cause I just can't go on living all alone without you, darling, Lulu Bell.
That part of the cornfield where we asked the studio audience to help us shop. Who is our first guest this evening, Mr. Roberts?
Well, this is Sergeant Trudy Lindsay of the Women's Army Corps, Mr. Howard.
Oh, how do you do, Sergeant? Well, it certainly is a pleasure to have you with us, Miss Lindsay, or Sergeant Lindsay, I should say. How are you this evening?
That's fine, thank you, Mr. Howard.
That's fine. And would you care to tell us just a little about yourself? That is, where's your hometown?
My home is in Detroit.
Oh, Detroit, Michigan. Isn't that nice? Great town, Detroit.
I think it's not a coincidence, Mr. Howard. You know, I have a lady friend in Detroit.
You have?
Yeah, she called me up on the phone at 3 o'clock this morning.
Yeah?
Boy, I bet you were mad. Having to be waked up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No, I didn't mind. I had to answer the phone anyway.
You had to.
You know, Mr. Howard, Miss Lindsay here looks a great deal like my sister.
Yeah.
Yes, she does. It's a funny thing, too. When my sister and I were kids, she used to be crazy about dolls, and I used to be crazy about soldiers.
Uh-huh.
Now she's crazy about soldiers, and I'm
you're
crazy
about
dolls.
All right.
Oh, that's funny to me, isn't it?
I think it's wonderful the way women are serving their country these days, just like men.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to give women more independence after the war.
All right.
Oh, they'll have their own organizations, their own clubs. Don't you think there should be clubs for women?
Only when they won't listen to reason, Miss McMahon. Pay no attention to these scatterbrains, Miss Lindsay. Could I ask you one more question? That is, what did you do before you entered the service?
I was a dressmaker.
Oh, a dressmaker. Well, isn't that a coincidence? My wife used to be a dressmaker, but she's lost her form lately. We used to, while Johnny is there with that dunce cap, I'd like to have you do something for us. Would you pick out a question for us, please? Oh, you have one. Would you read it for us, please?
Yes. What is a bookworm?
What? Did you hear that, gentlemen? What is a bookworm?
Isn't that a person who has his nose stuck in a book all day?
Well, now, Miss McConnell, for once, you're on the right track.
That's funny. I had my nose stuck in a revolving door once.
No.
There's a lot of that going around. You know?
There's a lot of that going around. Cut out those small puns, please. Look, let me explain it this way, if it will help you. Now, for instance, I'm reading a book.
Oh, you are? Really? What's the name of it, Mr. Hart?
Mr. McNaughton, I haven't got a book. Now, look, here it is. When I say I'm reading a book, I'm elucidating.
I perspire myself.
Look, if I'm reading a book, where is my nose?
Good heavens. Now he's lost his nose.
I haven't lost my nose.
Oh, that's true. Say, wait for a minute. Maybe you left it in your handkerchief.
Oh, no, please.
Mr. Howard, isn't that your nose right there in the middle of your face?
No, that's not his nose. That's a wart that made good.
Thank you, Mr. Sheldon. Look, if I'm reading a book, my nose would be near the book, wouldn't it?
You mean you're nearsighted?
Maybe you need glasses, Mr. Howard.
Maybe he's had too many glasses.
Can we please get back to the question here?
Oh, with pleasure, Mr. Howard. Did you say it was a bookworm or a hookworm?
What's the difference? A worm or a worm, no matter how you wriggle it.
Wriggle it. You're talking about chewing gum now. Wriggle it. Let's get
Mr.
on.
Mr. Sheldon,
here.
Did you ever pick a worm up and look at it square in the face? It's so silly looking. I mean, no expression, no sex appeal, no personality. Void of all intelligence. It's the dumbest looking thing.
Now we're back to Miss McConnell again.
Enough to turn around and take a bow. Who is our next guest, Mr. Roberts?
Our next guest, Mr. Howard, is Specialist M, third class, Stanley Delavey of the United States Navy.
Oh, hi, Stanley. How are you, Stanley? You don't mind us calling you Stanley, do
Not
you?
Not at all, Mr. Howard. Well, that's my name.
Oh, fine. Well, I think we ought to have him on the board of experts here, Mr. We sure are glad to have you with us. Would you mind telling us just where your hometown is?
Philadelphia, Mr. Howard.
Oh, Philadelphia. Well, what do you think of that?
Well, thank my knees and call me Zoot Suit.
Yeah, call you Zoot
Suit. I used to work in that town, Mr. Howard. Yeah, I was an optician in a needle factory.
Oh.
You were an optician in a needle factory?
Yeah, I used to test the eyes.
Never mind.
Get the point there?
You know, Stanley, I worked in a shipyard during the last war. Yes, I was a porthole tester.
A porthole tester?
Yes, I used to test the portholes, you see. You see, I'd stick my head in the porthole. If I couldn't get my head out again, the porthole was too small.
That's very clever.
You'd be surprised how many ears I lost doing that.
All right, please.
days. You say you're from Philadelphia. That is quite a coincidence, Stanley, because that's where I happen to be from. What part of Philadelphia are you from?
West Philadelphia.
Oh, West Philadelphia, around Baltimore Avenue?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I lived at 56 in Baltimore Avenue.
That's so.
Is that your neighborhood?
55th and Master.
Oh, 55th and Master. I see. That's above Market Street. Yes, I know that locality quite... What did you do in Philadelphia?
Hey, you two want to be alone?
Well, if you let us get...
Mr. Howard.
Just reminiscing, Mr. Shelley.
Oh,
that's all right.
Mr. Howard, I lived in Philadelphia once.
You lived in Philadelphia?
I lived on the corner of Chestnut and Walnut, you know.
Oh, Chestnut Walnut.
Had a lovely house. It was the nuts.
Oh, I know. You didn't live on no corner of Chestnut and Walnut if you know you're Philadelphia.
I just made it up.
What did you do in Philadelphia?
I was a salesman.
You were a salesman in Philadelphia?
Yes, sir.
You know, I was a salesman, too. The first day out, I remember well, I got two orders. Get out and stay out. I remember that. Well, we're mighty glad to have you with us.
Yeah, what's your first name, honey?
He said so. Stanley.
What?
Stanley.
Oh, Stanley. What a cute name. I just love that.
Yes.
It's only cute. It really is cute.
All right.
Yeah. Well, honey, you can just call me Girdle.
Girdle.
Yeah, Girdle.
Yeah.
I'm full of snaps.
You're full of snaps. And you sure do spread yourself when let out. Let's go, Harold. Would you, Stanley, would you kind of do us a favor and reach into that dunce cap there and pick out a question for us tonight? And when you get a hold of it, would you mind reading it, please?
What does fire insurance protect us against?
Now, that's a very good question. No help from the audience, please. What does fire insurance protect us against?
Would you mind repeating the question, Mr. Howard?
Please, Mr. McNaughton, why don't you listen?
I was listening, and it sounded to me as though you said, what does fire insurance protect us against?
Well, that's what I did say.
You did? Isn't that a coincidence?
Isn't that a coincidence? It makes no sense. Mr. McNaughton, I bet when the snakes get drunk, they see you.
I hope they enjoy it.
The question is, what does fire insurance protect us against? Do you know Mr. Sheldon?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'll give you a... Wait a minute. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say that you did understand the question, that you actually know the answer to what does fire insurance protect us against?
Yes, I do. I know the answer. What? Fire insurance protects us against being fired.
Being fired.
Congratulations.
Well, you cut it out and get back.
He's wonderful.
Here's a guy who's going around shaking hands with everybody on the orchestra. Will you sit down, please?
Okay, ain't you gonna congratulate me, Mr. Howard?
Look, Pinhead, that is not the answer.
You mean that...
I mean it is not the answer.
What do you mean it's not the answer? I heard it with my own ears.
Oh, you did? Are those your own ears? I thought you were breaking them in for a jackass head. Mr. Sheldon, fire insurance has nothing to do with jobs. The fire I'm talking about is the kind that burns.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean. We had a fire in our house last week, Mr. Howard. Woke me up in the middle of the night.
Did you get up and get out?
No, I never go to fires.
He never goes to fires.
You know, where I live, we have only one fire engine, but we have 8 dogs.
Yeah, what are the dogs for?
They run ahead and find the fire plug.
They run ahead. Another session of our quiz show is ended, but we'll be back again next week, same time, same station. We'd like to have you listen. Now, here's a young man with a voice like a nightingale with laryngitis to tell you what we mean when we say...
It pays to be ignorant, to be dumb, to be dense, to be ignorant. It pays to be ignorant just like... One night we had a blackout. My sweetheart was full of life. We kissed, but when the lights went on, for someone else's wife, so you see, it pays.
It Pays to be Ignorant, starring Tom Howard, Harry McNaughton, George Shelton, and Lulu McConnell, with another guest expert and Matt Novick's Rhythm Butchers. We'll be back to pester you again next week. Thank you. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Hear the most annoying sound in the world?
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.